Thanks, Joan, for that great introduction. You left off the last part of the about the problem solving, and that is just the poems are just what you might need. Thanks to Jimmy and to Joan and Dawn for organizing this, setting it up, and just as importantly, inviting me, which is a delight for me to be here. Thank you all for being here. And thank you for inviting me with such distinguished poets. These guys are, I'm honored to be reading with them. Recently was Father's Day, and I was lucky enough to spend it with my son. And I am touched by that relationship much more than I ever thought I would be. And coincidentally, two of my poems were published a week before, and they have to do with him. So I think it was luck that that had something to do with that. The first one: who here loves Bloomfield? You love Bloomfield? Oh, Bloomfield's great. That's wonderful. Okay, this is called Bloomfield, Pittsburgh. Not much is really blooming, except on the one flower bed, under the signature sign, just over the bridge. And the fields are mostly on the TV screens, necks stretching above the bars where sports hypnotize their Pittsburgh lovers. Everybody who moves to preppy Shadyside eventually ends up happier in bluer-collar Bloomfield. My conversion came through my son and his rock band, The Little Wretches, who asked me to open with my poetry for their Bloomfield Bridge Tavern gig. Bloomfield Bridge Tavern, what a place. Tiny and smoky in those days, as if to say, this is a corner off the mill floor where the iron-bending world builders can rest with their own. The food, big, bold commas of kielbasa, and a standing, bet you can't finish this pierogi and haluska serving. How delicious opening for my son's rock band. They were all so cool in their unbelievable 20s, and I wasn't. But I invited all my friends, not sure I'd have another chance, and foolishly remembering that Elvis used to open for the Leuven Brothers, and Bloomfield is all about trying. I did okay. My son's band brought down the house, and we bridged to my friends. But my memory was stolen by a childhood woman friend with MS, who made me understand Bloomfield, even Pittsburgh, as on that miserably cold night, she negotiated her motorized wheelchair through a slog of snow and ice. I nearly hit her when parking. She was dead a year later, but not to her friends, not to me. This is a another poem about my son that came out about the same time as Father's Day, a little before. He's done very well. He's a father himself, and a teacher and a coach, and I'm real proud of him. It's called, "I See My Son Among the Little Children." He's coaching his son and others in a soccer that is way beyond their skill and comprehension. He is a care giant among them, a kindly among the confused Lilliputians. At first, they do everything wrong. But then, like the rock bands that many of them will be part of, they connect. Slowly, they start the crossover pass that, at least sometimes, hits another's foot. And someone makes a goal and realizes it. My son played soccer all the time I raised him and played in rock bands. He is patient, happy. The sun is in my eyes, can't take a picture, but he's blurred in my brain, our catcher in the field, saving something for us all. Thank you. Little homage there to J.D. Salinger at the end. I have been told by people, somebody asked me what I was going to write tonight. And I told them I was going to write about my family. That was going to be my theme. And they said, that's no theme. That's what you do all the time anyway. So I write personal poetry. And some people suggests that it's confessional, and some people have suggested that I should write less hard-hitting, nicer poetry. And so I wrote a poem about that called Creative Writing 909. It starts, the first line has a four-letter word in it, but I'm going to leave that blank in deference to Joan and Dawn and Jimmy, and I'll let you fill it in. It says, what the blank is a crocus? Or lark at evensong at vespers? Do they rhyme with myasthenia gravis, stark, or nightmares like those my wife used to suffer from? Are they found in the sepulchral corridors of hospitals, the identical plush office interiors of doctors' offices? I don't know how to attach only a delicate gilt of organdy edge to this life. I can't name one thing made of alabaster. What would poems about a family be worth without a bow to an ex-wife or an ex-spouse? This is called Luminary. Just in case you think I got screwed up only recently, let me tell you about that fire. My wife in those days was a candle maker as well as a crazy maker. Like many artists, just good enough to be impossible. We were having a big drinks party to celebrate Christ's birth, although he wouldn't be coming or mentioned. But the wine, much advertised in his bio, would be plentiful. And candles, lots of candles to celebrate my wife's talents. And for atmosphere, we lit the hell out of the place and then ourselves. Drink up was the last thing I heard. But I woke up in time to douse out the growing flames and to sleep in throat-coating carbon, back-to-back in bed, silently blaming the negligent one. Did I tell you we had a 4-year-old boy, so tender he unexpectedly kissed my hand in the park one day? So I guess my son appears again there. He keeps appearing. Must be on my mind. So another anniversary that came up recently was my brother's birthday. He passed away about 15 years ago, and he was a giant in my life, both emotionally and physically. He was always there as a support, but there are no sibling situations that are perfect. This is called Check. I stare at the final shreds of my old checkbook. Little damage can be done to the fray of sleek alligator hide that was my brother's love, belt hard and smooth, covering all my loose spending. As a child, he stole all my dresser change, quickly spending it to nothing. Later, he learned to turn a buck like kicking a bothersome leaf in the cold wind. Finding faith in every sad thing my father told him, he tried to invest it back in me. Never to sell capital, never to buy on margin, never to co-sign what you can't pay, always to talk of money. He never hit me after I was 12, neither for the way I mocked him nor how I stole back my time from him, even as his checks still floated me. I take out from the billfold a photograph of my brother next to me, formal, dark suits, serious faces, very much in the bandit tradition. I'd like to do a couple more poems here. I'm reading mostly new stuff, but you don't want to pass up this fabulous book. There's still a couple left here. They've been flying off the shelves. I managed to get a couple over here just in time for you. Buybacks they were. This is by my father. It's called Locks. I sleep near my father's hair, curling next to my bed on a shelf, his soft 4 fingers of silky blonde in a gray box, now broken, still showing a small but distinctive crest, as if for the Pittsburgh noble he never became. His parents took more from him than that grasp of hair, hothousing him in the child purgatory of the Monongahela House, his mother dying early, his father mourning, obliterating all but his merchant tailor business. My father's childhood was briefly saved by his grandmother's farm, idealized in his telling to sweet lettuce patches, cucumber sandwiches, a gardener who blew the foam off his reward beer in the face of a cat named William Howard Taft. His mother's brief vitality, cancer growing than the spring radishes. And they left him less, an eternal thirst for love and whiskey, a rage at injustices done to him, two children who drank more and hid their thefts and philandering less than he did. My father's hair is tied by a small piece of string, so I can touch the ancient and loving oils of my grandmother's hands. The string is as dried now as worn out compassion, but that won't crack and blow away. Thank you. Thanks. Thanks, guys. Threw this in as a little break here. In my graduate studies, I focused on rhetoric, and I focused on one of my compatriots back there in rhetoric, and I focused on problem-solving rhetoric. The question is most important to focus the inquiry, but I've come to believe over time that there are questions we really don't want. That's what this poem is called. I was in the men's room of the Grand Opera House, and it occurred to me there are certain questions we really don't want answered, such as the one the opera playbill suggested. Why did the capitalistic encouragement of stay-at-home wives end the courtesan and create much increased prostitution? More immediately, why was the man two sinks down standing in his underwear washing out his pants? And questions we really don't want asked. Do you still love me? Are you having an affair? Is what you write really poetry? No comments. I see too much nodding going on in the back row. I thought just for fun, I would read a poem. It's the only review I ever got from an editor that was, ew. See if you can tell me which stanza was the ew stanza. This is called, and this of course fits in with the family because it's self-descriptive. It's called A Quick Affiliator. A woman once called me. Perhaps I'm too fast with a first name or to join the team, too immediate on the ask. I once signed a card to my brother, to a fellow I had only a passing acquaintance with. Too familiar, my father would say. Certainly I married before I knew either of those people. I've had too many good friends. Be more reserved, my father would say. I've tried to scale back, cover with humor. I even asked world-famous writers to sign their books to Jay, who saved me from the tiger that time. I'm very good with airline stewardesses. The one in my hotel bathroom right now is probably wondering if she knew me well enough. I'm wondering about the winks the blonde desk clerk downstairs and I exchanged. When a woman sent it back to me and said, "Now, I don't want to pick a fight with you, and I'll pay you." She actually paid. "I'll pay you anyway," she said, "but I can't publish that last stanza." So she said, "Now, you don't have to, you know, I'll just pay the rate amount, but if you want to, you can rewrite it." So I rewrote it, proving, as my son pointed out, you are a quick affiliator. But I'll spare you the last rewritten stanza. It's not nearly as good. All right, I would like to do one last poem here refers to one of the few times I talked to the deity. It's called Eschatology. Suppose God is unsure and wants to know how creation worked out. Who better to ask than us? I imagine a purgatory. Hey, this will be taxing and painful work, most suitable for the transgressive. There, the most discerning, the critics among us, well, you guys, will be met as we struggle creakily out of the needles and pins and hot pokers or whatever else makes up our punishment. Yes, he will be he, and in a white beard, so as not to shock us, and will say, as at the exit of a new amusement park, something like, "How was it? How'd you like the ride? Would you take a minute?" Rhetorical, because what else are we going to do? And fill out this brief survey, which of course won't be brief because it was one long trip, and hello, we're in eternity. I'm afraid I don't have time to reproduce all my suggestions for the whole survey here, but some selected possible questions follow. One, you know, the usual demographic stuff. Where were you born? How long did you live? How mean was your mom or dad? Please circle which was meaner. On a scale of 22,000, with 17,650 being the best you humans could appreciate, how would you rate your life? Three, on the same scale, how do you rate policy 1297B, the so-called nature red and tooth and claw policy? Note if you've had any personal experience with a policy. No metaphors, please. Four, how'd you like the horse? Or the way I filigreed the fall breeze through those trees I think you call maple reds. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.